available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, at long last, back to the Podcast of Champions with both Dave and Ryan. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. For the first time in 3 weeks, David, we're back together again doing the POC.
I know. It's I feel unfamiliar. I feel out of my element. It's a new world. We're back. It's incredible.
It's incredible. It's good to be back. Cal OSHA just said today, and the governor signed it into law here in California, if you're in your workplace, you don't got to wear a mask if you're vaccinated.
This is the first time I've recorded this podcast without a mask on.
Oh, very good. That's nice.
In a month and a half.
I did go to the gym this morning and didn't wear a mask. It was so nice. It's so much nicer.
But like things like the gym, like how many of the people in there were still like masking up between their like workout shit?
So you're saying the gym people were probably less likely to wear masks?
Yeah, kind of, because they're gym people.
Yeah. I just hated like being on a bike for 45 minutes, like breathing heavy through a mask. It was just like
yeah,
so I wouldn't even mind wearing a mask.
I chose not to do that because of that reason. Not just because
of that
reason.
It's nicer. I mean, it's like a really hard workout. And when you're breathing heavy, like climbing a whatever, you know, it's like, oh my God, having the mask on was the worst. So I'm happy to not do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, we can be in the same room now.
I know.
Well, we can't really today, but other days we could be.
Other days we can, and other days we will. Soon, this will be a podcast where we can obey each other's visual cues and not just try to get words in edgewise. It's going to be incredible.
I'm looking forward to that. I'll make sure the little mini fridge has beer in it in the office, and we'll have a drunk POC. That would be good. If you have a question for any of the drunk POC hosts, you can email us pac12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got a couple of voicemails. One I'm going to have David look at. One was like 2.5 minutes long, David. I don't think we can play it, but if you want to summarize it, or we could just play it, who knows. But our buddy Perk called in again. And if you want to send us a text, you can do that too. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast. The website is Pac-12Podcast.com. Over on Reddit, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. If you want to talk to other POC listeners. And of course, on Apple Podcasts, follow and rate us. Give us those 5 stars. We love it. Anything you write on there, if you give us the 5 stars, we'll read it. Could be erotic fan fiction for one of our hosts, because we've had that too. We will read that as well. But everyone, thanks for coming back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm excited to be doing this with Dave.
It's incredible. We've got 3 new reviews, Ryan.
Oh, nice. Okay.
First one's from Awesome Donnie. 5 stars. So obviously we're going to read it. POC, stay on track, Dave. Great chemistry, great podcast, especially when Dave is in the mood to talk football. Hitladay is a listener who asks great questions and tries to keep Ryan and Dave on track. Awesome knowledge of Pac-12. I wish they would cover basketball starting with the Pac-12 tournament. I have been listening since the first podcast. Great podcast for college football fans sick of SEC football coverage. Love it, Donnie. Yeah. Asking awesome, me to stay Donnie. On track is, wow, that's like asking water to flow only one way. Jerron Smith, 5 stars. These guys talk sometimes about Pac-12 football. Ryan and Dave have grown on me over the last few years of listening. While they are not who you'd go to for the freshest insight on your favorite Pac-12 team's tight ends coach, they do offer decently in-depth takes on most of the teams. They also will take on a host of other topics that usually will not have a wide audience, example, Civil War generals, Disney princesses, etc. But this is the Pac-12 we are talking about. Audience is probably slim to begin with. This podcast gets niche without trying to be in a hurry, but in the most lovable way. Could the show use more polish? Yes. Should they read and edit emails before reading them on air? Most definitely. Is Dave a liberal? A very earnest no. Is every episode a must listen? Nope. But most are great for those tasks that you can listen to while something, you can listen to something while you work. Are there better Pac-12 football podcasts? No. I don't think there are any others, though. Love it. Thank you, Jerron.
And then there are other ones. There's other ones out there.
There are. This is from Jared Max, a 5-star review. Can't remember what they said. I listen to this podcast at the gym. I never remember what they say or what is talked about. I think it's good information, but can't remember. The person that passionately covers USC basketball is one of the hosts. I think the other person covers UCLA soccer and is a big soccer addict. However, they both come across as very knowledgeable about Pac-12 football. 5 stars from me. Love it. Thanks,
That's
guys.
That's awesome.
Appreciate it.
We do have, like, we're really lucky to have such amazing listeners that are funny. I mean, just the everything everyone writes in is hilarious. So great job, everyone out there.
Well, it's incredible when you consider the workload for 12 guys to have this many different Apple accounts and to write such clever things over and over and over again.
They are very, very good at what they do. But we do have amazing listeners. So thank you for all that. And, you know, they constantly say they like the chemistry between us. So maybe we don't know what the hell we're talking about, but we're kind of funny sometimes and people like that. So,
sometimes, sure.
Yeah. You know, Dave all did a time, solo no. show.
Most of the time, no. Yeah. But some of the time, yeah.
When you do the solo show, you get like one half of it. So it's not quite the same. I did a solo show last week. So it's good to be back. It's good to be back together again. And as David loves it, we got a lot of news. We got some breaking news. This is David's favorite part of the show.
I love this part of the show.
The stuff that I just write notes in and he's like, wait, what are we talking about?
I would say your filter for it is like not my filter for it, like what's interesting and what isn't. And then that time, remember when we used to have the intern, what was his name?
With Micah?
Yeah, when we had Micah write the notes in. I love Micah. Great guy. Just a barrel of notes. And you're like, I don't even know who these guys' names are. I don't know who we're talking about right now. This is my kind of note today.
You like this note? So the big news.
Scandal.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
A little scandalous for the Sun Devils.
I don't know about a little here.
Yeah, like I was curious to get your take on this because when I first like glanced at it, I was like, oh, whatever. And then like Thamel's story was pretty damning. Wilner came out and absolutely roasted Arizona State. We've got people on the record like David Shaw, Oregon State, you know, Stanford head coach, Oregon State athletic director, Scott Barnes. This is one of those things like you can cheat. Like if you and I are playing pickup basketball and like I call a foul on you, it's like, okay, like maybe it wasn't a foul, but it's sort of accepted. But this is one of those like rules that apparently if you break, it really pisses people off. I don't know what the analogy would be for pickup basketball, but like this is one that's really made people mad. So if you weren't doing this, if you weren't hosting basically what was an official visit weekend for your spring game during the global pandemic, people are mad, Dave.
Yeah, well, this is one where it's a real competitive balance issue because everybody's paying players or figuring out some way to get shady with the rules. Like that's not, I don't think anyone's going to call that out publicly because everybody's doing a little something. You know, you can't ever be, even if you think you're a relatively clean program, you can't be sure what every assistant coach is doing. This is different because it's two things. However you land on the taking COVID seriously spectrum, and I know we've got a bevy of viewpoints on that, some stupid, some not. It was a very seriously taken pandemic for the Pac-12 and for many of these states. This is obviously flouting all of that. And I don't think it's a coincidence that ASU, how many games did they have to have canceled this year?
Three in a row. They had the opener against USC at 9 a.m. and then missed the next three. The only program.
Could it have been because they kept shipping in random people from out of state?
I mean,
I'm not kidding. Like,
no, I mean.
Because, like meaningful stuff, because that is, okay, you're in the middle of a pandemic, you're probably aiding and abetting outbreaks on your own team. How many of those outbreaks spread to the outside community? Like, I'm not, literally, how many deaths did this cause? Because that's the framework that you have to think about this first. Secondly, from a competitive balance perspective, it doesn't sound like any of these. I mean, if David Shaw is going on the record and saying that, that sounds to me like there are 11 coaches pissed off about this because nobody else is breaking the rules like this. Yeah. If a coach is so comfortable going like that on the record, then that means he's very comfortable saying they didn't do it. And I have a hard time believing UCLA did it from everything I know about how they were handling the pandemic. And looking at all those other institutions, it's hard to imagine that they were flouting it to the extent that ASU was, if all these reports are correct. This is really bad. This is the kind of thing that I think actually could get him fired, because it's this is the kind of stuff that reflects poorly on the university, not just on the football program, not just on athletics, but on the university as a whole. And that's the kind of stuff that can get people, big money people and the decision makers at the university board and whatnot levels pretty pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Ray Anderson and the athletic director, I mean, they came in with this weird, you know, not weird, but like the different idea of how to have a leadership model. And this just looks like there's a breakdown all over the place. Like you said, it could go far up there that this was going on. I mean, it's one of those things where there's so many people that were involved. There's all these former staffers. Like basically it sounds like if you weren't on board, they let you go. Well, now you have all these disgruntled people, like people lining up to give notes to the NCAA and evidence. Plus you have all the kids that visited and most of them didn't go to Arizona State, you know? And like, hey, were you there this weekend? And the NCAA doesn't have a lot of power. I was listening to Pete Thamel talk about this on his podcast. And he said one of the things they do have, though, is if, you know, they could, you know, not allow, you know, that, hey, you can testify on the record. You'll be exonerated or whatever. I'm blanking on the word, but, you know, you would be protected. This wouldn't come back to hurt you. But if you don't, if you lie to us or if you don't say anything, they could prevent you from going to whatever school you end up picking. So it looks like, and they have a dossier. How cool is that? Like, you got a dossier of information for this stuff. It's a big deal. You know, like this is, it sounds like some of these cases take a long time, even if you have like great evidence. This sounds like
almost like it could be over quickly.
Yeah. Like the Varsity Blue stuff. It was just like, when that came out, it was like every I was dotted, every T was crossed. You're like, oh, okay.
That's the thing. The reason to fire him isn't a violation of NCAA rules. That's the thing. It's the lack of good judgment. It's the maybe you could even call this lack of control of his own program. I know he's directly implicated, but it sounds like Antonio Pierce is the one running the recruiting show to a large extent. This was, you know, the story is it's multifaceted because somebody in the program was willing to blow the whistle on this too. Like having that amount of evidence just immediately dumped to you. And it sounds like there was a lot of internal turmoil in that program too. Like Antonio Pierce rubbing a lot of people wrong. So I don't know. It sounds like kind of a mess just like institutionally. And it's the kind of thing where, look, I don't even know what the NCAA would decide to do from an investigation standpoint. I don't think this is the kind of thing they do like a show cause for. No idea why they would. You know, because this is the kind of thing where you're like violating dead periods. I don't think those are like major, major violations. I think those are like, you know, multiple minor violations. Right. Like, I don't think these are huge things, but it's the perception for the university. It's the actual good sense that was showed or lack thereof. And I mean, legitimately, and I don't mean to frame it histrionically, and I don't want it taken that way, but it's just simple math. If you're bringing in X number of people during a pandemic, you know, and it was the same thing I was arguing all of last year about having football. Yeah, it's a contained environment, except when you do stupid shit like this. Like, okay, you're bringing in random people from across the country. Have they been in a pseudo bubble? No. But it's this kind of stuff because you've got a million people making decisions, some of whom are making them very badly. And you can't control for chaos. This is chaos. But that kind of chaos, you can't allow it. You can't forgive it. So it's going to depend. And, end of the day, if Herm was winning 9-10 games a year, I wouldn't even think ASU would fire him. But as it is, you know, they're winning 7 games a year. Yeah. Is he winning enough to keep his job through something that looks so bad. Like it looks so bad. The perception is so bad. Is it enough to keep him?
Yeah. And I want to get into like ASU's performance and what this could do to derail their potentially, you know, Pac-12 South winning season. But I want to read what David Shaw said about this on the visits. It's a disrespectful thing to do. That doesn't sound overly harsh, but for me being a lifer in this profession, and a coach's kid, I believe in respecting our profession and respecting the other people in the profession. And then John Canzano tweeted out what Oregon State Athletic Director Scott Barnes said. He said, disheartening and disturbing would be how I would categorize it if, and let me say if, what is out there turns out to be accurate. And, we have to go with that caveat too, right? This is if all this stuff is true. I mean, it sounds like.
Yeah, but it's obviously true. I mean, it's obviously true. If it wasn't true, ASU would have come out with the strongest goddamn statement immediately. And you don't hear mountains of evidence. You don't hear about these specifics if it's not true. It's true. Yeah. It's definitely true.
It was one of the things like you.
The only question is whether there is any additional or mitigating context, and I can't imagine what that would be.
Yeah, this is one of those things like I don't think you come out with all of this if it's not true. Like this would be a tough one if there's egg on your face. And you're like, oh no, they didn't host anybody. Like the report was completely wrong. Like you're gonna look terrible as a reporter. I don't think that's gonna happen. But the head scratcher for me, David, is like you can lie about certain things and no, it's probably not gonna come out. It still might, but you have a good opportunity. Like this was one where you were like, basically, if people weren't on board, staffers weren't on board, get out. Like, so you're firing people, which is, a bunch of people, and there's disgruntled. And then all the players that you bring in, what did you swear them to secrecy? Like, I mean, it's just one of those things where, and then you get the outbreak on your campus. It just seems like it's just poor judgment. But like, don't you think, you can cheat, but try to cheat at stuff you're probably not going to get caught on. Like, it's almost impossible to think that you wouldn't have got caught for this one.
Well, that's the important thing to take away from this is that it's very stupid. I mean, they were all very stupid. This is all very dumb. This is a very dumb thing. Pay these guys. Send them money from across the country. I'm guessing your ROI on that is going to be a lot better than a bunch of visits where 90% of the time they're out walking around campus, they're still going to have to wear a mask. Just pay them money. Send it via FedEx. Give them 50 grand each. You don't need to set up illegal visits. This is stupid.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. It's recruiting hustle culture. Oh, we're just going to keep doing it. We're just going to keep pushing the envelope without acknowledging any of the surrounding environment issues. It's just dumb. And rightfully, they're going to get slapped pretty hard for it.
So, Arizona State's been like the 7-5 program, right? Like that's what we've seen. We felt like, oh, recruiting's going better. This is a team that could break through. There's more, more of the pundits are starting to pick Arizona State to be a contender in the South for sure. I forget, Wilner might even had him as his pick. I forget but people have, Arizona State has definitely been in the discussion. But it always seems like there's some reason something weird happens and it's 7-5 and maybe it was a more talented team than that. One year's a building year. One year's like, well, then this happened and this guy got hurt. Now it could be, wow, this team looks like it's ready to break through, but this scandal happens and who knows, maybe there's some turnover on the staff. I mean, this potentially could derail things that, looks like it could be a great season, I don't know, any thoughts on that? Because it just seems like this is one of those things where I guess Arizona State could overcome it, but it's going to be tough, I think.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is, legitimately, and maybe I'm not assessing ASU correctly as an institution, but I think there's a good chance Herm Edwards doesn't see the season, right? Like, I think there's a possibility that happens. And if that happens, you can't measure what's going to happen from a roster perspective, from a performance on the field perspective. I would get out ahead of it and get rid of him. And then see if you can salvage a season out of it.
But the problem is, the heir apparent, and according to the report, from Pete Thamel, like Antonio Pierce, there was a power play kind of thing going on. I mean, if he's heavily involved in this, you can't get rid of Herm and let him take over because you know, what if he was the mastermind behind it? I don't know. Those are details we don't know. But
you know who's sitting on the sideline? Arizona native. Guitar strumming, Rick Neuheisel. Get him out there coaching yet another Pac-12 team.
He, I can read the tweet. Like, so College Sports on SiriusXM tweeted it, and he kind of had a lot to say about it. There was, like, I don't know, I think a minute and a half or so. Rick Neuheisel weighed in on it, and he said, you know, if these are true, and then kind of the same sort of sentiments that David Shaw did. And then Sean at Sir Minus tweeted out a blurb about Rick Neuheisel. After choosing to leave the Buffaloes in 1999, Colorado was investigated by the NCAA for 53 recruiting violations, 51 of which occurred while Neuheisel was the head coach. Neuheisel got into even more hot water at Washington when he improperly visited five of the Husky recruits. They took a little shot at Rick for taking a shot at ASU, but I thought that was fun. But he came out with some pretty strong statements too.
Good for Rick.
Yeah. I actually went on Pac-12 radio this morning. We talked about this a little bit too, but I really just, when I looked at it at first, I was just sort of like blew it off. I was like, oh, you know, it's probably not that big of a deal. And then you start reading into it, you're like, oh man. And you know, I wasn't even really thinking of the COVID stuff, which your points are all very valid. And, you know, I didn't think about, oh, ASU missed three games in a row. No other Pac-12 team had to do that. But, you know, I know, when, you know, covering USC, I'm not saying they didn't do anything wrong. Who knows? But, like, it sounded like they took it seriously. Like, they were lifting weights outside in groups of 10, and they had to figure out a way to keep barbells from getting too hot because they were sitting in the sun, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So
there was some crap like that going on. Now, maybe they did other things that weren't right, but, like, you were hearing some, especially the California schools. I mean, Stanford going.
Yeah, you're hearing about these insane procedures they're going through for all this stuff. And I'm sure right. ASU had a similar amount. But also, it's hard for me to fathom, given that I know, like, players were not interacting with each other off the field or off court in basketball. It's hard for me to imagine UCLA then hosting a bunch of high schoolers on, like, secret visits.
Yeah.
It's just, it would be hard to fathom. Or for any of the California schools, from everything I gather, or the Oregon schools, or the Washington schools, from everything I gather about the procedures in those states and at those universities. Harder to speak to Utah, just because the state, I don't know, I just don't really know how aggressively Utah dealt with everything. And Arizona, I mean, at the state level, it was not as stringent, but still quite a bit more stringent than hosting out-of-state visitors. Like, that's unfathomable.
Yeah. I mean, USC right now still isn't hosting any camps because their campus is essentially still closed. So I think for their visitors, they do, you know, they do special things for, and, you know, they could have done that back then too. Who knows? But I'm just saying, like, they're still not doing camps, and, like, you know, there's still procedures if anyone wants to go on to campus. I think if you want to come to campus as a student in the fall, you have to be vaccinated. So there's some controversy about that. We haven't heard. We'll talk about the opening. They're going to have 100% capacity in the Coliseum, but we don't know about tailgating yet because right now it's like there's limitations of how you could be on campus. So there's still a bunch of restrictions in place. For this to go through, everything that happened, it just sounds like, yeah, there had to be a lot of, you know, just a lax attitude towards almost everything.
Yeah, pretty nuts.
Well, that was the big news. We got to talk a little playoff stuff too. I got to talk about this last week on the show. So today and tomorrow, the College Football Playoff Management Committee, which is a bunch of ADs, they're going to discuss that proposed 12-team model, which I think came from like the working group. Washington State's Kirk Schultz, he's the Pac-12 representative for the Board of Managers. Then the presidents will discuss it on the 22nd. But when this stuff came out, Dave, you know, and we talked about it last week, it almost sounded like it was just a done deal. And I wasn't really thinking 12-team model. I thought they'd probably just go to 8. It seems a little aggressive. There's some cool stuff. There's some bad stuff. But I just wanted to get, you know, since you didn't get to talk about it last week, I know you're a huge proponent to
Well, I'll start with the one positive thing I think about it, which is that the proposal is to not do auto bids. It's the six highest ranked conference champions get bids, which is a much better way of doing it than just gifting every Power 5 conference winner a bid. Yeah. So I like that more. That's better than the auto bid. The rest of it, I mean, I've gone over it to death, and there's no point in rehashing it. I think it's all kind of stupid. I think if you're going to opt for silly fun, what I would do, blow it out of the water. Like, why stop at 12? Like, make it, if you want to get the silly fun of the NCAA tournament, make it the NCAA tournament for college football, which means, I think I did the math, it would be about 24 teams. Make it, you know, one-fifth of the available schools, and make it that that's basically the secondary season. Yes, and does the NCAA tournament diminish the value of the regular season? Oh, you betcha, it does. But you get a huge silly fun quotient at the end of it and a ton of participants. I think that would be a better way to go than, I think 12, you're kind of now in like this weird middle ground. I look, as vehemently as argued against 6 or 8, 6 or 8, you're probably still ending up with roughly a true champion every year. At 12, you're introducing enough randomness that there's going to be some weird occurrences, but you're not introducing so much that it's a ton of silly fun. And that's where I think it's kind of missing. Okay. I think at 8, you know, you're probably still, you know, ending up with roughly a true champion every year. And at 24, you're getting a ton of silly fun. Like, you're getting, it's going to be stupid. There's going to be weird upsets. It's going to be fun. Because there's enough games that there's going to be wild variants. At 12, I just don't know that you're getting the better of either world. So, you know, now that we're operating in the world where this thing's going to expand anyway, shit, man, I would opt for the silly fun. Just go, go 24, go 32. I don't care. Make it big and stupid. Just with the understanding that you are going to have to either cut the regular season or treat it as the, increasingly unimportant thing that it is.
Well, so some of the interesting aspects of this, by the way, Jimmy Lake, he wants to see the expansion. He came out, I think it was in Wilner's article, he was quoted or something, but, one of the things I kind of like, and if you're worried that
of course wants it because he's never going to get Washington in the top four again.
Sure. But if you are a Pac-12 fan and you don't want to see, you know, Oregon or USC or something be like Banta fodder for Alabama in the first round, the 12 team, you probably think the Pac-12 sweet spot for making the playoffs is in that 5 to 8 group. Well, you get to host a playoff game there. So you could play like, you know, what if Oregon was playing Coastal Carolina or something at home in Autzen Stadium? Like, that's, I think, a positive for the conference. You get a win and then have to go play like Alabama or someone on a neutral site. But at least that, if you make the 5 to 8 group, and that's like right where the probably the best Pac-12 team will fall most of the time, you do get to host a team that you probably have a decent chance of beating. It's a little weird that the top four teams that, so they're the top four conference champions, according to the rankings, they won't get to host a game. So that's kind of controversial, but if you're 5 through 8, you get to host a playoff game. And that would be, I mean, would there be a bigger game in Autzen Stadium history than hosting like Iowa State or something for a playoff opener? Like, that's kind of, I think that's kind of cool. I don't know, what do you think?
Oh, come on. Yeah, there's bigger games in Austin history than playing in a fucking game to determine who's number 9th in the country. Are you kidding? yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, I mean, in this scenario where the Pac-12 is basically in its permanent position as like a also ran major conference champion, yeah, I mean, I guess it's good to host that first round game before you're the sacrificial lamb. I mean, I think the whole thing is stupid. If you're not good enough to be in the top four, I mean, you're not good enough. But, yeah, I mean, in the convoluted way that they've created this thing where the 5 through 8 get this weird advantage to host a game that the 1 through 4 don't get. And in some situations, the 1 through 4, if you've got multiple teams from the South, one of them is going to have to go way out of region, right, to play there. Because these are going to be the traditional bowl games, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think it's like that first.
This Rose, is like Sugar, Orange, right?
Yeah.
They'll be hosting the top games. So, I mean, you're still going to have things like Alabama or Clemson or whatever playing in the Rose Bowl against potentially Oregon or USC. So that seems like an obvious flaw in the ointment, fly in the ointment. So, Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's still some things to iron out here. I just 12 seems like such an awkward number. I sort of get why they chose it. I think there's a theory going around that the SEC wouldn't do this unless it was 12 because they wanted to get four teams in every year. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's dumb. I don't think it stops at 12. If it's going to go that deep, I think it should go further.
I think this was from Wilner about the Pac-12 teams roughly receiving like $9 million annually. Now it could go up to $27 million per school. I don't know how accurate that is because they haven't renegotiated this. Like we're probably going to see the four team for the next 2 years, but it could potentially go to, I think, 2026. ESPN owns it. I don't think anyone else can really take it over. So it's sort of like you're negotiating against yourself. It's worth more money to ESPN, but are they willing to just, you know, dump $2 million in this? Like, probably not, but it looks like this is happening. So, you know, we'll see if, you know, when the presidents meet in a week or so, if something's finalized. I don't know when it will be, but I think they still have to like go through all the negotiations with their television partners and stuff like that.
Exciting stuff.
Last week, I talked about Sam Noyer from Colorado. He entered the transfer portal, so Colorado did announce that. But we now know he's going to Oregon State, so he can compete with Tristan Jebbia up there.
Yeah, so that's exciting. Judging by, you know, what I saw last year, I think Noyer's got a good chance there if he regains what he had at the beginning of last year. He struggled down the stretch. This speaks to the confidence Colorado probably has in Brendan Lewis, right?
I would think so. It does make the battle in Colorado interesting, but also at Oregon State, they got, you know, Jebbia, they got Noyer. You know, neither one of them is like, you know, sets the world on fire, right? But you got two potentially really good quarterbacks, so at least your backup's going to be good. And then they got some young guys that are competing as well. So, but the quarterback transfer stuff within the conference, like you almost need like a separate category for that, just because it's always all that stuff's so interesting.
Yeah.
And I just saw this before we went to record, but Brett McMurphy, he said, no joke, the new Los Angeles Bowl will be named the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl. It will be held at SoFi Stadium featuring Mountain West number one and the Pac-12 number five. It debuts December 18th. So I don't know. What are you like, Cal out there? You striving for the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl? Like, whoa.
Oh, yeah, it's stupid.
Everything's stupid today.
I mean, that's what's the point? Like, did his show really put a bunch of money up to advertise him?
Apparently.
Okay.
Have you been to a Jimmy Kimmel show?
No, I have not.
No, it's not kind of fun. Well, now that we don't have the Tonight Show on the West Coast anymore, that's like the one late night show you can go to. But if you know you got someone in from out of town, it's kind of fun to do.
That's great. Well, I'm glad the LA Bowl already made some sponsorship money.
Yeah. There you go. I don't know if you saw Bud Elliott, his blue chip ratio basically comes out every year and says you have to have a certain ratio of, you know, 4- and 5-star talent on your roster to have a chance to win the national championship. And last year, only USC and Washington were in. This year, Washington's blue chip ratio fell below his threshold and they're on the outside looking in. So there's 16 teams in the country. Oregon did make it in though. And I think passed USC, but USC and Oregon, do you think those are the only two rosters capable of winning a national title, David?
That makes sense to me this year, especially. And this is definitely check out the piece. It's really good. It's basically the formula is it's very simple. If 50% of your roster is blue chip, meaning 4- or 5-star players or above 50%, you have a chance to win the national title. And if you don't, you don't. And obviously, in the grand long run, that probably won't turn out to be accurate, but it has turned out to be deadly accurate thus far. If you're just eyeballing things, USC and Oregon are the two teams with the talent. Washington's probably just on the cusp. They're probably in the high 40s. Historically, I know UCLA made it into the blue chip ratio back when Mora was doing his thing. But yeah, it's these are generally the the four schools that can find themselves in that: USC, Oregon, Washington, and UCLA. Yeah. Now, obviously, in a in a once in a blue moon situation or something weird happens, some team is going to make a run that doesn't have that formula. But yet another obvious proof that recruiting matters and stars are good.
Stars are definitely good. I know he'll get slack on Twitter, about, I was looking at my Slack channel, but he'll get flack on Twitter about, well, Clay Hilton's a bad coach. It was like, he's like, this isn't about development. It's not about coaching. It's just that the only way you have a chance to win a title is if you recruited this well. If you didn't,
it's the prereq.
Yeah. So, but people get all, he's like, that's not what this is trying to predict. This is not like, it's not trying to predict anything. It's just, unless you have that level of talent, like in basketball, you can do it with like a, but, you know, senior point guard and a, but, you know, you can make a run. It's just really hard in football if you don't have those Jimmys and Joes, you know, you need all those guys.
Yeah.
And one last thing, I don't know if you saw any other stadiums, but I talked about Arizona announcing that their stadium would be full capacity. Arizona State followed suit. They're going to be full capacity. USC also did. I
think earlier. The Rose Bowl did as well. I think
the Rose Bowl did as well. Okay. So there's probably other ones that I've missed. But yeah, so this is a good sign. I don't know what tailgating will be like. I don't know whatever, but like just seeing, I think it was last week when I was talking, like seeing the, you know, Utah Clippers, I think it was the opening round game, and like a full freaking indoor arena was pretty crazy to see that going on. And then it was also weird to see like Ty Lue like wearing a mask doing a press conference by himself afterwards. I'm like, you were just in a stadium with like 16 or 18,000 people. Like, why are you by yourself wearing a mask? I don't know. But yeah, so good sign. You know, hopefully things stay this way and we get to have potential full stadiums in the fall.
Yeah. I mean, as pessimistic as I've been, I mean, looking ahead, it's hard to see things backsliding tremendously. I mean, I think you might see some upticks because of, you know, whatever, various variants and stuff. But it sounds like, I mean, first of all, people are pretty gung-ho to just do this now. And with the amount of people vaccinated, it seems like there's some meaningful, diminishment of transmission. So I don't know. It's hard to see things getting significantly more restrictive again. I mean, you could see some things come back in place, like people having masks or whatnot. But no, I mean, I think we're going to have a regular football season, I would have to imagine. And more or less everyone doing full capacity.
Yeah. So cool stuff there. All right. Any other notes, David?
I got nothing, Ryan. Yeah. I am ready to answer some questions from
our listeners. Take a quick break. Yeah.
You wanted me to stop talking like that?
Well, if you're going to pause, then you should stop. Otherwise,
you keep wanting talking. To. You just want to stick your words in between mine.
No, I want to hit this.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back on the Podcast of Champions. It was an abrupt entrance to the break, David, because it got a little awkward.
Yeah, I was kind of arguing with you heading into it. and then you just abruptly cut me off with that beautiful music.
That was fun. But thanks, everyone, again, for tuning in. We got to get to some questions. Did you have a chance to look at that long voicemail, David? Do you think we should play it? What should we do
here? Okay. All right. Hang on. Let me give it a quick peek.
Okay.
Whew.
We got a bunch of questions today. It's pretty long. I got it right here. I got it queued up if you want to play it, but it's like 2.5 minutes long.
Yeah. Hit us with it. What the hell?
Okay. Here we go. Long voicemail coming up.
What's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. This might be a long voicemail, so I apologize in advance. But basically, I was reading about what Larry Scott was saying. It is kind of like exit interview type thing. And he said something, not the exact words, he said something along the lines of USC, Oregon, Stanford, and Washington weren't performing. And he kind of placed blame on them for his struggles, the Pac-12 struggles, and he was there. And so I started thinking, like, one thing I've noticed is that David on the podcast keeps saying that the reason the Pac-12 is struggling is because USC and UCLA aren't where they need to be, and that he thinks, you know, USC needs to be elite and UCLA needs to be, I believe he said, a top 15 team year after year. So I just kind of, I didn't really agree with that because, I mean, he was saying that UCLA is the second, David was saying UCLA is the second best program historically in the Pac-12, but I didn't really think that was true. You know, I mean, they've won one national championship, which is honestly kind of sad. And I'm not trying to start anything with Dave. He's one of my favorite podcasters. I just wanted to ask a question, start a conversation, you know. Like, for instance, like Washington, like Larry Scott mentioned, has two, you know. Cal has five. Now, Cal's a terrible football program, so don't get me thinking that I'm trying to say that Cal is a good program. I'm not. But my point is, if they have five, how the hell is UCLA, who has one, the second best program, like, if that makes sense? And then, I mean, like, for instance, Washington has the same amount of conference championships as UCLA. They got 140 more wins. And at least they have won a couple conference championships. You know, they won one in 2018, one in 2016. I know they got killed by USC and in the playoff in 2016. So maybe that wouldn't be a great year. But my point is, like, the last time UCLA was any good was 2014. And then, like, Stanford was good in 2017, was great in 2015. And they have more national championships than UCLA. So I was just kind of trying to figure out where exactly he was coming from with UCLA being the second best program. I know he said historically, that's why I didn't include Oregon, because I understand where he's coming from there. But, you know, I mean, I don't remember. I don't even think I was alive the last time UCLA won conference championship. So I just want to know exactly what he meant by that, because it seems like Larry Scott kind of agreed with me on that. And Larry Scott's an idiot, so it's not necessarily a good thing that he agrees with me. But I think a lot of people would agree with me. So. If I could get your thoughts on that, again, I'm not trying to argue with you or, you know, talk shit to you or anything. I just kind of want to know what you thought, and maybe if I get Ryan's thoughts, that'd be great as well. So thank you, guys.
Good stuff, Evan. So yeah. I want to read off to you the five national championships that Cal has in the years that they came in. Are you ready, Ryan?
Yes, I'm ready.
1920, 1921, 1922, 1923, and 1937.
I assume that's also before Evan was born.
Yes, quite a bit before. And I would argue that Cal has not been good since 1937. Stanford's national titles are in 1926 and 1940. So we're getting close to to the United States' participation in World War II, but not quite there when Stanford was last a national title winner. And that's not to say UCLA's has been particularly recent, but if you go back and look, UCLA is, I think, tied for second with Washington for most conference titles since it was a real conference, behind USC. Obviously, USC is the dominant power. But, I mean, UCLA has a real pedigree in relatively modern college football. I think it's been an awful as I have no doubt testified many times on this podcast. It's been an awful 23 years since UCLA was last good enough to win the conference. But historically, I mean, I think it basically goes USC, obvious number one, no close second. And then Washington, UCLA in this long battle for number two, where Washington has definitely made up some ground in the last 20 years. I don't think there's much question about that when you think about it in terms of modern history, because you do have to go back to like leather helmet days to find national titles for Cal and Stanford. But that's not to say that like, Your point is invalid because I'm talking historically. UCLA has not been that in the last 23 years. When I'm arguing that they need to be better, I'm not saying that when I'm saying they should be a top 15 team every year, I mean, they should be recruiting like a top 15 team every year because that's what the recruiting base says they should do. And if you do that and the coaching is adequate, you should be pretty good every year too. What it has been for the last, again, 25 years is they've made a lot of bad hires. Chip Kelly was unlucky. They made a good hire there. It just hasn't worked out. Jim Mora, a mediocre hire, turned out to be better than it was. But Rick Neuheisel and Carl Durrell and Bob Toledo were all bad hires. And it killed the program when it was... I mean, UCLA was the first number one, I think, in the BCS rankings ever in 98. And then it just completely fell off a cliff. But anyway, the recruiting base is what sustains it as a potential power in perpetuity, really. But it just hasn't gotten there very recently. So it's completely understandable that you think that's nonsense because it has been for about two decades now. And Oregon and Washington for sure have taken more of the, I don't know, market share or whatever you want to call it for football. And the reason Larry Scott is talking about Stanford and Washington and Oregon there is because they fell off in his watch on under his watch. You know, when he started in whatever it was. When did he start? 2009, 2010?
2009, yeah.
They were beginning to peak. And then they dropped off considerably in 2013, 2014 with basically a power vacuum at that point because USC didn't step up. UCLA, which had long been the number two in the conference, continued its doldrums. Long way of saying you're not completely off base. I mean, it depends on your like kind of time horizon that you're looking at. If you look at like SRS rankings, if you want to look at like the historical rankings of the programs, it's USC, then UCLA, then very close behind UCLA, it's Washington.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Just the markets that you're in, like you need USC and UCLA to be good. It just helps the entire, you know, even though UCLA hasn't, none of the schools have, you know, like they've been, boxing below their weight class, I guess you could say. So you need to get those programs back. But just being in Los Angeles, it's good to have LA teams be good. And that helps, you know, it's like that rising tide for all the boats.
Yeah. So, all right. SRS. UCLA is the 25th best program all time, and that's behind a bunch of shit that's like non-existent anymore, like Iowa pre-flight. So among real programs, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15th. And Washington is 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21, 22. So UCLA 15th, Washington 22, USC is 1, 2, 3. All time. And then after Washington, it's Stanford, which is 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27th. And then Oregon's after that at somewhere in the 30s, then Cal quickly after that. So kind of the way it goes. But UCLA, yeah, they've been dropping off for a while now.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that one, Evan. I like Evan's voicemails. You want me to play Perks too? We got another.
Yeah, why not? Voicemail. Let's knock it out.
Here's Perk.
Hey guys, it's Perk. I just wanted to raise some points about Dave's objection to the expansion of the playoff with a 6-team format where you'd have five of the Power Five conference winners and then an at-large bid for the best group of five team or Notre Dame. I think Dave does, you know, I think you do a really good job of asking the question of whether people just want more games or they want a better way of determining a champion. And I truly think that a 16 playoff would do that. And as for the argument of, you know, all it takes is a quarterback or someone getting injured in a championship game and then a bad conference winner making it, I guess my question is, when has that in the last 20 years happened, and when has it happened on a regular basis? Because I think Clemson kind of proved it this year. They struggled without Trevor Lawrence, and it was kind of proven that Clemson wasn't the team everybody thought it was when they got beat by Ohio State. And I would just say, if you're down a quarterback and you lose that bad, I don't think you're truly an elite team. And as for the first round bye argument, I think it's been pretty clear since they've done the playoffs that there is indeed a pretty big separation between teams 1 and 2 to 3 and 4. Especially in years like 2019, where LSU and Ohio State were a lot more dominant. And I don't think having a first round bye is really that big of a deal, especially because I think we already have one. It's pretty much whoever plays Oklahoma and Notre Dame. So I think this would easily eliminate the fatigue that people have of Alabama winning the national championship every year, which seems to be why people want extended playoff. So just wondering what your guys' thoughts are, if the 16 would make any sense given now they're wanting to go to 12. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I mean, like I said up top, I think 6 or 8 would make a lot more sense than 12 as far as like determining a real champion. If that's still the goal, I think if they're going to 12, the obvious goal is they want to make money. And making money is generally done easier by making it stupid, silly fun. That generally doesn't result in, you know, necessarily the best team winning. But yeah, and if the priority is still getting the best team, I mean, I think it's 4 works fine. I think 6 or 8 would more or less get the job done. 12 seems overkill for that purpose, but that seems obviously to not be the purpose.
Yeah. You know, I think we talked about this a lot. So, yeah, I mean, 12 was a weird one to me. It's sort of growing on me. I'm just like, oh, and I like some of the thought that was put into it. It's not just, we went from 2 to 4 and then we went from 4 to 8. Like, yeah, this is kind of interesting. So I like interesting stories. 12 just makes it a little more interesting to me, but it would be more sloppy fun if it was like 16 or more, like Dave would say.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that's all the voicemails I had today.
All right. Where did you leave off with questions?
I'll go. I think it's Frank in Sacramento. I think Larry likes to roll dumb, and I'll play this.
What's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe.
That's the wrong one. This is this one.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Pressed the wrong button there. I can roll. I rolled dumb. Ryan Abraham rolled dumb on that one. This is from Frank in Sacramento. Funny how Larry Scott, he spells it with one T, took a swipe at USC for not being a nationally relevant program during his tenure as a reason for his failings. He's the guy who piled on by making the nut decision that the Trojans could not play in the conference championship games once USC's bowl ban was announced by the NCAA. This move further aided the descent of USC from national prominence over the last decade. I don't know if that was a reason, but...
No, come on. Come on, Frank. It didn't matter.
I think, like, when you saw, like, some of the allegations or whatever, like the NCAA stuff against Penn State... I think the Big Ten was behind Penn State and try to protect, you know, one of their marquee programs. The Pennsylvania State Legislature did stuff. When USC got those sanctions and, you know, at the end of the Pete Carroll era, Lane Kiffin era started, the Pac-12 didn't really, you know, stand up for USC in that case. So if you want to argue anything, you could maybe say that.
This is chicken shit. Who cares? And it come on, it gave us the funniest thing in the world, Frank. It gave us 6-6 Rick Neuheisel in the conference championship game in 2011.
It did do that.
Didn't we all enjoy that? Come on. It's fresh off of 50-0 getting into the conference title game. That was so cool.
Rick, I totally forgot that was Rick Neuheisel's team.
Yes. That was so
even
cool.
More reason. The gloves, without gloves, and he still made it to the conference championship game. So
like, yeah, picked themselves up off the mat to like play a decent quarter against Oregon in the conference title game. Amazing. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Actually, we skipped over Danny's re-ask of his question, so I'm going to go back to that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So this UCLA at SoFi question, he wanted my take on it. Did he ask it again in his second email? Maybe he did.
I think it might have been a second.
Oh, okay, yeah, he did.
That was just the last email.
We'll get to it in a second then, Danny. You hold your horses. All right, I'm going to answer Jerron's question here. This is from Jerron Smith, or Jerron in Vancouver. Well, now I've just given away everything. Jerron, sorry.
Proposed... He gave his last name and then tell everyone where he's
from. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, now everyone knows where you are. Proposed playoff format, the most win-win-win option. Hi, Ryan and Dave. I know there are many issues the pack faces that will not be directly remedied by changing the CFP to the proposed new format. Example, keeping recruits on the West Coast and getting USC back to being USC. Television contracts, kickoff times, game exposure to the Eastern time zones, the growing money gap between the conferences, etc. But isn't this not a win-win-win situation? The SEC wins by getting the opportunity to have multiple teams in the CFP, same as everyone else, but they have the best players and track record of any conference. The ACC, Big 12, Pac-12 all win since now they have legit shots at getting two teams in on the regular with outside shots at three. See the if the new format was applied to past years. The G5 schools win since they are guaranteed a spot every year and have decent chances at more than one team getting in. Ultimately, it is hard to see how this doesn't at worst improve the chances of a non-Bama Clemson Ohio State winning at all. Is there a case to be made that this is worse than the current format for the Pac or anyone else? I mean, I think I've made that case about a million times.
Yeah.
But, there's a case to be made. If you want to make the case that this improves access for all of these and they can, you know, get multiple teams in with a, you know, an outside chance at winning, fine. That's fine. I've made the arguments to death, and I don't feel like continuing to make a losing argument into the void because it doesn't matter because it's going to expand anyway. So I'm not going to do it again. What you're saying is valid. Like, these things might all shake out for the best, and maybe there is a little bit more luck to be had for the also-ran teams. And we'll see, because it's going to happen. So we'll see.
And that is the thing. Like, we're going to get something. So I think trying to look at, well, how can – I think the SEC was the best at gaming the system, right? They were very good at it when the BCS was going on. Certainly with the playoff, they've been the best at it. I think if you're the Pac-12, you got to look at what the positives are. Okay, you make some more money. That's great. But if you get to host a playoff game a lot of times, that's cool too. The one thing I didn't bring up, David, was the potential end of divisions. And I think Pete Thamel talked about this on his podcast, you know, the Yahoo Sports podcast a little bit too, where you're trying to avoid the 6-6 team, you know, winning the conference because that team wouldn't be ranked in the top six of the conference champions and your conference champion wouldn't make the playoff. So instead of having the North or the South or the East or the West, you have the two best teams, basically like the Big 12 does it now, I believe. So there's a potential if this goes through or when it goes through that some of these conferences reevaluate and say, we're not going to use geography as a means to determine who's playing in the championship game. We're going to allow the two best teams to play because I think one of the examples was like a North Carolina team that's in the top 15 and Clemson play. If North Carolina wins, they're going to get in, you know, but Clemson will still get in, you know.
And so, Jerron, one of the consequences of this thing is exactly what Ryan is talking about right now, which is the sacrifice of everything the regular season is structured around just to make this playoff. Talking about taking away divisions, taking away the natural geography of all of that stuff, just to reorganize it so you have a better chance of making the playoff, which that's the way this is all trending. But that's not the way this sport has always been. And so it's going to be a big shift. I don't think people are fully acknowledging how much it is going to diminish the regular season. But what Ryan is talking about right now is diminishing the regular season. It's making it focused solely on one of your conference teams or two of your conference teams or three of your conference teams making the playoff. And that's the goal. Yeah. And it reorganizes everything around that goal, which isn't necessarily bad. But I think everyone needs to prepare themselves for the idea that your regular season games are not going to feel the same in this format. They're going to feel a little bit less. And that's just going to be the new normal.
Yeah. This is confusing. This next one from Thomas. Did he send this one already?
Yeah. So we don't need to read it again.
Okay. That was one we already did. Okay. I was just, there's a voicemail.
And then it's Danny.
Okay. Danny DC in LA, said, "Hey guys, question for you, the August and all knowing body of Pac-12 knowledge. Why doesn't the Pac-12 add four more teams, making this conference the first to 16? 16 would do several things, in my humble opinion." Okay. One, 16 could mean four divisions with four, each with four teams, presumably each treat and each team in each division. I'm sorry?
He's got to mean team there.
Yeah, I would say that's a team. Each team in each division would play each other every year, making rivalries in each division more intense. Two, being first means Pac-12 or Pac-16 could pick the most attractive schools. I could see getting Texas, Texas Tech, Nebraska, BYU. It would be compelling to those schools as it would give them access to California recruits. As an aside, it would also give the legacy Pac-12 schools access to the Texas recruits. And three, the Pac-16 could legitimately claim that their territory is everyone west of the Mississippi. Love the show. Never miss it. And always hit refresh every day to get the podcast ASAP. Well, that's cool. P.S. Your last show, you said you were going to defer my question on UCLA playing at SoFi Stadium, copied below. And two, you're both on the pod. Looking forward to hearing your perspective on that one, too. Okay, so this was, I didn't realize this was both of them. All right.
But well, I love the Pac-16 idea. I think it's a little bit harder than we're thinking to get Texas, Texas Tech, Nebraska, and BYU. Right. But I love it in theory. Why the hell not? I actually think my crazy idea is, okay, the whole college football won't maybe do it. Develop a promotion and relegation system just with the Mountain West. Like, just have a relationship with the Mountain West where, like, you get to promote a couple of teams, you get to demote a couple of teams, and you have, like, agreements to play each other in the non-conference.
Yeah, I mean, any kind of relegation thing.
That would be so sick, dude. It would be awesome.
And you'd have built-in
opponents. Built-in opponents every year.
Yeah. I love that. I think that would be cool. Like, you want your own, you know, whatever. Like, you... something that's unique to the Pac-12, like going to 16 is sort of like, if you could get teams like that, sure, but you're probably adding like San Diego State and Boise State and stuff. I think it's better to have, you know, like you, what you said, a relationship with the Mountain West and a relegation series. Like that bowl game, the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl, the first place team in the Mountain West plays the fifth place team.
Yeah, no, that's like the relegation bowl. Just make it the first place team versus the last place Pac-12 team.
and then you get to like, yeah, you get to move up.
Yeah.
That would be kind of cool. Relegation is awesome. Like we both despise soccer, but relegation kicks ass. You know, I don't even understand it all. It's just like a neat concept. So I think that would be a great, you know, whatever, like that's the Pac-12's claim to fame or whatever you want to say is that there's relegation. Damn, that would be fun.
It'd be so cool. All right. And then the other question that Danny had was whether they should break whether UCLA should break the Rose Bowl lease and play at SoFi.
Yeah. So that was
I think it's a beautiful idea. They're not going to do it, Danny, but it's a beautiful idea and they absolutely should. The Rose Bowl, God love it. It's an old ass stadium, way far away from UCLA. Diminishes student attendance. They don't need to play there. I know for a lot of people it's like tradition or whatever, and it's a beautiful stadium or whatever. Who gives a shit? No, play at SoFi. Get some of your fan base actually there.
That was my thought. Is like it seems to make sense. I mean, he talks about, you know, if you go to the Rose Bowl, it's like a single lane residential street to get into the damn.
Yeah, no, it's a pain. It's an absolute pain. And yeah, okay, you get to stare at some mountains while you're watching football. Okay, cool. really far away from UCLA. SoFi is, you know, for better or worse, it's closer. Requires a little bit less traffic to get there from UCLA. Do SoFi.
So, that was my thought too. Like, this probably would make, you know, as far as like football sense goes, yeah, play at SoFi. But what are the reasons, like the traditional, like what would stop this from happening? Because I don't think it's like the Pasadena that residents.
I'm pretty sure the homie Dan Guerrero and the gift that keeps on giving. I think he signed like a 30-year lease with the Rose Bowl.
Oh.
So I think that's, I mean, it's an issue. I think you can always break a lease, but it's an issue. And then tradition heads. There's a big tradition head element around UCLA sports generally. It's hard for them to think differently about this stuff. You know, we don't hang banners for Final Fours and we don't play anywhere but the Rose Bowl, except, you know, not the Rose Bowl for the game that actually matters, you know, all these things. but yeah, I think it's a much better idea to play at SoFi. And hopefully that's something that happens in the near future.
Yeah. Would that be a little more motivation to get to the actual Rose Bowl, but not playing home games there?
maybe. Like, no, I don't want to make one more damn bus trip up to the Rose Bowl. Let's not play there.
How big of it is for the students? Like, because you're going to...
It's a pain in the ass. It was a pain in the ass as a student. Like, I, you know, would find a way up there, either go with my older brother or whatever. But, like, you have to take a bus. You've got to be there for the bus after the game. I don't know. It was a real pain. I mean, when you look at what like USC students can do, you can like roll out of bed hungover, just kind of like roll over to the stadium. Like, you know, basically you're walking like 400 feet and you're there. And that's how it is at most schools. UCLA, it's not like it's just a drive. It's not like it's just going over to Jackie Robinson Stadium to watch a baseball game. It's 30 friggin' miles, and most game days, it's a lot of traffic. Like, a lot of traffic. If it's anything after noon on a Saturday, getting up there, it's a pain. Yeah. So it's just, yeah. I mean, I think it ends up being something where, you know, UCLA students get a lot of bad rap for their fan attendance at various things, but, like, the amount of students that show up to the Rose Bowl, I'm always in awe that there's a ton of them there for, like, certain games. It's like... I don't know. Like, if I wasn't covering the team my senior year, I don't know if I was coming to the Rose Bowl. Are you freaking kidding? Pain in the ass.
I would say we're in an era now that even if it's easy to go to a game, I mean, it's more expensive.
Yeah.
The COVID restrictions.
The TV stuff is so good now.
Yeah.
It's one thing even like 10, 15 years ago. But now, like, even bad productions of games, you've got so many angles, you've got so much stuff on the screen, like, you're watching so much that's hard to view in a stadium. Like, it's, you know, it's a better viewing experience to watch it on your TV. So you really have to, I don't know, you got to make that part easier on them. And not to say that SoFi would be in a piece of cake. Obviously, the goal is to eventually have a UCLA stadium near it. You know, or build something out of Drake or whatever. But SoFi would certainly be an improvement.
Yeah, it is tough because the you know, it's such a great experience to watch games in your house and you can be on the social media and all that kind of stuff. At least SoFi would have, you know, that big screen up there, all the technology stuff, you know, Wi-Fi and everything, just all that would be upgraded. So at least give fans and students a better opportunity to watch the game in person. But I think everyone's fighting the battle of trying to get people to watch a game in person isn't an easy task nowadays.
Yeah. So just to give everyone some perspective, it's about 30 miles from UCLA to the Rose Bowl, and it's 14 to SoFi.
Yeah. So significantly easier. And there's like freeways and stuff, not.
Yeah. It's not one weird road into it. Yeah, it would be an improvement. Obviously not the perfect one, but it would certainly be an improvement.
Oh, all right.
Okay, next up we have Earl in West LA. Carol Smith Gilbert and Mel Tucker. I'm guessing Mel Tucker. Guys, yes, Mel. Last year, Michigan State used some of their big TV money to hire away Mel Tucker after one season at Colorado. This week, Georgia hired away Carol Smith Gilbert from USC, who just won her second NCAA track and field championship last week. I recall predictions of this happening due to the disparity in payouts for the Big Ten and SEC schools from their TV networks compared to the Pac-12 network schools. What can the new Pac-12 commissioner do to close the gap with the competition? I don't know anything about the track coach, but I don't know if that's really like a great example. I mean, maybe USC just didn't care. The Mel Tucker thing, I think that's a classic case of yes, Big Ten money helped there, but also they poached from one of the schools that's the least cash rich in the Pac-12. If Mel Tucker had been coaching at Oregon at that time, I don't know that Michigan State had been able to pull him away, if you take my meaning.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an interesting one. I don't haven't dug into a lot of the details yet. It's interesting because her son, Spencer Gilbert, is he's on the football team. He should be a redshirt junior this year. They're from the South. They're from Alabama. Her husband played football at Alabama. I actually golfed with him one time at one of those tournaments and stuff. Cool dude. So, and she did win her second national championship. You know, she was the first woman to, you know, coach the men at USC. I believe that's going to be the same case at Georgia. So, you know, that they have a lot of track history at USC, but most of it was, you know, like in the 70s and stuff, where they won just tons of championships. And, you know, now track's weird because you're getting like, you know, quarter scholarship. There's just not as many scholarships like some of the other sports. So there's just not a lot of stuff to go around. But, you know, the fact that she was able to have that much success at USC, I think it's disturbing to lose a coach like that. I don't know that. I'll try to find out some of the details, Earl, and dig into it a little bit. Just haven't had time this week, but it didn't go over well on the message boards. You know, it's not like people follow track all the time, but you're like, hey, you get a, you know, they like what the new athletic director has done as far as coaching hires go. Like they bring in, Lindsay, the coach from the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, to bring her in, and she was an NBA coach, and now she's going to coach USC women's basketball. They like a lot of the hires that they've made. This was a good hire from before, but to lose one, you know, I don't know if it's budget or whatever, or if it's, you know, the family wanted to get back to the South, all that. But she's had a lot of success in her, you know, short time at USC. I believe her son will still be on the team, but I don't know that yet. But yeah, I don't, sorry, Earl, I don't know all the details of why that went down, but could, you know, could being able to throw a lot more money at a track coach in the SEC because you get a ton more money from your TV contracts? Maybe, but I mean, I would assume it had something to do with it.
Yeah, maybe something. Hard to know, though.
Yeah. Let's see. We got this one. That's people wanting some swag. And then I think we got one last one.
Ooh, yeah, baby. You got
Bobby. Wilner and Herm Rhetoric. Okay, so this is going to be from an ASU perspective. So we pretty much crushed ASU at the top, so I think Bobby's going to try to bring us back down to earth here. Hi, Ryan. Just no, Dave, just me. I'm an ASU fan, so of course
he preemptively knows how hard I crushed Herm.
He's an ASU fan, so of course I'm going to be skeptical of anyone critical of Herm, but it seems like Wilner has kicked it into overdrive. Wilner has been hating on ASU and Antonio Pierce and Herm the past couple of days, more so than most journalists. One thing in particular Wilner tweeted out is something that is factually inaccurate, but it implies that ASU did something untoward in the game versus Oregon a couple of years ago. Let's see. Wilner, Prentice Gill, referenced in this story, was an Oregon analyst in 2019 when Arizona State upset the Ducks. 10 days after the game, he joined ASU as an assistant recruiting coordinator. And he gives a link to the tweet. This implies that Gill had something to do with why Arizona State beat Oregon, even though he still worked at Oregon. This calls into question his agenda because he's clearly anti-Herm / AP, Antonio Pierce. Not sure if I can really bring myself to trust the motives of his reporting when he's tweeting out stuff like that, which is 100% conjecture. I mean, did Prentice Gill unlock a cheat code for Frank Darby and Brandon Ayuk that allowed them to torch the Oregon defensive backfield that was supposed to be one of the best in the Pac-12 that season? How would the offensive playbook help ASU's offense? But I digress. I'm still waiting for more allegations to come out. But if I'm being honest, I don't think contact during COVID is a big enough deal to clutch pearls at. I remember hearing a specific story about a Texas A&M coach, quote, bump contact with Christian Kirk back a few years ago. Stuff like this happens often. And to act like this is some groundbreaking cheating that Arizona State has devised is disingenuous at best. I'm sure ASU football will get penalized in some way for its infractions, but I'm still waiting for the shoe to drop on some meaty charges like paying players or providing illicit drugs / strippers / et cetera, aka the Louisville special. Otherwise, that just seems like a molehill that Wilner and friends are trying to make a mountain of. Thanks from Bobby. I'm just going to walk away, Dave, and let you go at this.
Yeah, the shoe already dropped, Bobby. That was the report about the bunch of visits during the COVID stuff. Now, you might be one of the people who, you know, treated that differently than others, and that's, you know, whatever. It's your deal. But it is a big – it was a big deal. It is a big deal. It's a big enough deal to clutch pearls at or take seriously like everybody seems to be doing and should. It's a bigger deal than a bump contact with Christian Kirk back a few years ago. Because that's like at a recruiting event or whatever. So like doing a bump contact, no big deal. Hosting official visits during a time when nobody can host official visits, that's a huge deal. Even if you just treat it as the rule itself. Outside of the rule itself, the fact that it was during a pandemic, the fact that it was introducing people from out of state into the state to potentially spread more of the virus around to people in the community and more than likely contributing to a few deaths, big deal. So yeah, it's a big deal. I don't know about the Prentice Gill stuff. Yeah, I mean, who knows? But look, I mean, you want to defend your school, and that's fine. You want to defend Herm, that's fine. But no, I mean, it is a big deal. And whether it results in him being fired or serious infractions or whatever, that remains to be seen. But I don't think it's people making a mountain out of a molehill. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, we talked about this, and it just, you know, when you look at what Arizona State went through and the only team to miss those three games like that, while recruits were coming in from all over the country, like David said, you know, everyone looks at this differently, you know, and Dave would call some people's views of COVID stupid or whatever. But like this does seem like you're bringing someone from outside that you don't know what they've been doing. I'm sure they weren't quarantining for, you know, hey, you can come visit Tempe, but you had a quarantine in your house for, you know, 2 weeks. You're getting on planes. They had been recruiting parts of the country that they traditionally haven't been recruiting as hard or as well. But the COVID, beyond the competitive, you know, disadvantage or, you know, that you put the other teams in the Pac-12, it's really this, you know, you could have been a contributor to the spreading of the virus. There was reasons why you didn't want people coming to your campus, and the fact that you missed three games, like I think it would be more important to have those three games than to host some visitors that you brought in from somewhere.
That's a good question. Like for Bobby, would it be a big deal? Would you find this to be a big deal if you found out that hosting these visits is what actually canceled those games? Like if you found out that was the thing, like they brought somebody on campus who tested positive when he got home or whatever. And that was what prompted the contact tracing that closed the program for three straight weeks. Like, if we found out that, would that be a big enough deal? Because that's major loss of revenue for the school. That's, you know, all those meaningful things that people who didn't even take COVID seriously found important. And I don't think that's I don't think that's disingenuous. I think that's a real concern here. Like, did the, and it's not even just, okay, did those directly result in the program closing? But the fact that they were hosting visits speaks to, wow, they really weren't taking this seriously. So what other, you know, drop-offs did they have that led to them missing three straight weeks? Was it just bad luck? Or was it the fact that this, and not only this, they were doing a bunch of other stupid stuff that, you know, made this happen? So no, this calls into question their entire judgment, and it needs now review by ASU or the president's office or whoever to figure out whether this stuff was pervasive, whether it wasn't just recruiting, but also they weren't, you know, following restrictions or guidelines or whatever. Because again, you cannot ignore the fact that ASU got hit harder than anyone else by COVID. And now it looks like, well, in at least one major area, they were being very stupid in how they were treating this.
Yeah. You know, it could be one of those things too, where you bring in a prospect that was clean, that, you know, wasn't really doing anything wrong, comes in. Well, I guess you're going to this faraway campus and there's some kind of outbreak in Tempe. And now you're sending maybe the prospect didn't come with COVID, but he goes home with it and spreads it somewhere else too. So that, yeah, it's, there's a whole like spider web of things that could have been happening from this. And, you know, we do have some evidence that games were missed, you know, and a lot of games were missed. And the, if things weren't locked down and you were still bringing in people from the outside, that could be why it extended longer than what other programs that had COVID outbreaks had.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it's all speculation, but the, it doesn't look good.
This, but the important note is that, yes, it is speculation, but this kind of judgment, this kind of thing opens you up to all of that speculation now. Yeah. And it opens you up to all of that investigation now. Because if the university has its druthers, it would now look into all of this stuff. Because I don't know, there might be like legal ramifications of this sort of thing too. Like, I don't know. This could go, you know, spiraling downward. So interested to follow along. But no, I don't think this is a minor deal. I think it's, you know, potentially it's a tip of the iceberg type thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the last question. I did get an email while we were discussing this, all that, you know, on our show. The Pac-12 Football Media Day will be held Tuesday, July 27th in Los Angeles. So, what is that?
Vegas,
bad?
Baby. Come on.
I know. West Hollywood Hotel at the W Hollywood, not the West Hollywood, the W Hollywood Hotel in LA. So not going to go back to Hollywood and Highland. One day event, 12 head coaches and two student athletes from each university, and the 12 athletic directors, plus representatives from the conference staff, including Commissioner George Kliavkov. You got Merton Hanks, who's the football operations guy. So, yeah, they're going to go to Hollywood Boulevard instead of, well, I guess this is just down the street on Hollywood Boulevard, but not the Hollywood and Highland, and it's not Las Vegas. But that's July 27th, so look forward to that.
Exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else, Dave?
No, I'm tapped out. I'm spent.
I am spent as well. An hour and 20 minutes talking Pac-12 football, and actually mostly Pac-12 football. There was really a lot of off-topic stuff.
I was challenged in the five-star reviews, and so I decided to really go for it.
Yeah, and the questions didn't really go into anything else. We didn't have to compare every coach to a, you know, popsicle flavor or anything. So good stuff, though.
Can you back to it next week? I want some stupid questions next week.
Bring it on. Bring it on. All right. Well, that'll wrap things up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.